Greetings. I am Sav Chagrin, podcast guru and president of the Podfix Network. Since revealing myself as the puppeteer of the Podfix Nation, I have felt the need to be more hands-on with the day-to-day operations. Therefore, every Thursday, I will be opening the Podfix Archives. An absolute museum for your ears. And best of all, it is curated by none other than myself, Sav Chagrin, and no one else. I will be blowing the dust off my personally hand-pressed vinyl copies of original airings of classic Podfix Network episodes, uploading them to the satellites, and then rebroadcasting them to the masses. Sure, it's a lot of extra work, but one thing I have learned over the years is that digital media converted to vinyl converted back to digital is the way podcasts were meant to be heard. And since I, Sav Chagrin, have done all the heavy lifting for you, you just need to subscribe today to Podfix Presents wherever the best podcasts in the world are found. And then sit back, relax, and enjoy. The Podfix Network, artist-owned and loved.
Hey everybody, this is Phil. I'm the dad, and I'm here to tell you what the results of our final Halloween movie poll were. We want to thank everybody who voted. We put up some great choices, and we saw some very passionate cheering for what you guys voted on, particularly among our winner, which was Train to Busan, 2016's South Korean zombie movie. We're really looking forward to this. And that is going to be the film that rounds out October for our big Halloween month. We've really enjoyed getting into The Evil Dead and exploring everything that that franchise has to offer. And then we're going to take a hard left into something completely different. So Austin and I are really looking forward to jumping on that train and seeing what it's all about and talking to you guys about it. Thanks very much to everybody who's participated, who helped share our voting poll and getting people involved. We really appreciate all of you, and we're looking forward to reviewing your movie. Thanks. Hello and welcome to the Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude. I'm the dad.
That's right, and I'm Austin Rude. I am the son. Each week we get on, we watch a movie.
We do.
And then we get on mic.
We also do that.
And then we talk about it.
That's
what we're doing.
Three for three.
Yeah.
Good job.
What do I get for winning?
You get to keep doing the show.
Okay, so you were going to kick me off if I got it wrong? Because I always get it wrong.
Every week you are on double secret probation.
Okay.
Now, if you can name the movie I'm referencing with double secret probation, you get to stay on for another week.
Okay.
Do you have a guess?
Oh, that's the reference is double secret probation.
Double secret probation. What movie is that from?
Is this, Super Troopers?
Ooh, no.
Oh.
I'm
that
sorry.
Was a good guess, though. Come on.
Not terrible, no.
All right.
You know.
What are we... What's that?
Animal House.
Okay.
So about... You're about 20 years late, but the same... same
brand of
same
comedy.
Same style of comedy. Yeah, yeah. Pretty good guess, too, because there is like a probationary thing in both of them.
If you say Fuddruckers one more time...
it's Shenanigans.
Oh.
I'm gonna piss and whip the next one of you that says Shenanigans.
Hey, what's that bar you like?
Oh, Shenanigans? God, I love that movie. Love Animal House, too.
Yeah.
Have not seen either of them in quite some time.
So that's not what you watched this week.
That is not what I watched this week. I actually didn't watch very much at all this week. I've been doing some writing. Trying to basically finished up most of my freelance work. So I'm focusing on my projects a little bit more. Couple of movies are dropping that I'm really interested in seeing. I don't know that I'm going to go to the theaters to see Bond, the new Bond movie, even though I've been waiting several years at this point for it.
Right. Are you going to see it at all? Or
oh, yeah, I'll definitely see it. Some of the Daniel Craig films are not great, but I really do like him as Bond. But the Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos prequel movie, came out last week.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for that.
Yeah, and I've been kind of interested. There's a few red flags in it that I'm not sure about, but I am curious about it because I was a big fan of The Sopranos.
Now, do you think they're doing prequels? I've never seen Sopranos, but right. I know about it. Are they doing prequels because it ended on like a cliffhanger?
It's not necessarily cliffhanger. It's really like famously ambiguous ending.
Okay. Do you think they're trying to preserve that though?
I don't know that you can do anything really after that, the way it ended. I don't know why they're doing anything now. It's been, you know, 15, probably almost 20 years.
Well, that's the time to start dragging up old shit and making money off of it again.
It might be. It's really interesting to think about because there is like a whole world there to explore. I'm not wild about prequels. I'm not wild about stunt casting. This has both of those. But it also could be really interesting and just a chance to kind of revisit that world a little bit.
Interesting.
Sopranos was a really, really good show. It was really, I think, kind of ahead of its time. It sort of explores, like, what does it mean to be masculine? What does it mean for a man to go to therapy? Like a lot of issues in the very late 90s that a lot of people weren't talking about. And it actually had real world influence in that study showed that a lot of men felt more comfortable going to therapy because they watched this show about a mob boss who swallowed his pride and went to therapy. And it's weird. Very strange. So, I don't know what this movie will actually be. But I am really curious about it. So I am going to watch it. I just have not quite found the time.
Interesting. But Sopranos is weird. Like, my vision of it from like the bits and pieces that pop culture has laid out for me.
Okay.
Like, it's a little like Breaking Bad.
Kind of.
But like, it takes place in a high school. Or something. There's a high schooler in it, or there's like I don't
might
know.
Be thinking
what that
of something
is.
Else.
No, I know what Sopranos is, but there.
Okay.
Isn't there a high schooler in it?
Well, like Tony Soprano has kids.
Okay, maybe I saw like a thing like kid subplot, but like
it could be.
I was like, why is this about mobsters and why are they at a school sometimes?
It's kind of you. Kind of have to think of it as like it is a family drama, but like the head of the family just happens to be in the mafia, so you get like mafia plots, but all the character work of like Tony is how he interacts with his family while also trying to run this crime family. Like it is a strange mixture of that, but you know, again, at the time, like when we used to watch mob movies, you didn't see the home lives of mobsters. And this is sort of like a different kind of take on that. It is kind of like Breaking Bad in that it's about a anti-hero, basically. Like a...
Yeah.
Like a...
And
a criminal.
Crime and...
Right, yeah.
Family drama.
Yeah, so...
It's got all the elements.
I'd recommend giving it a look if you're curious about it.
Yeah, I know he walks out of a diner at the end, so...
No, he doesn't,
or maybe
actually.
He doesn't. So
we don't know what happens. We don't know if he walks out of that diner.
I know the ending. It's too late.
Anyway, we're, you know, before we go too far into HBO melodrama, what have you been watching this week?
What have I been watching? I watched... So I started Squid Games. Here's the thing about this. TV
I've been
show.
Hearing a lot.
It's good, but like not. I think the weird thing, because I've heard about this through children who definitely should not be watching this, but not because it's like a very violent and gross TV show, which it is, but because that's like 5 minutes out of every episode, and the rest of it is just like very adult, like drama that I'm like,
right. Like, what does a kid get from this?
This is boring, yeah, right. To a kid. But yeah, it's really interesting. It's basically The Hunger Games if it was completely optional, but also not optional, because they seek out people who are, like, millions of dollars in debt.
Right.
And, like...
predatory.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's really interesting. Hmm.
I wish we had some sort of real-world analysis or comparison to make.
Yeah. But it does make me curious about, like, South Korean film production and TV production, like, has gotten, like, a really big boost recently. Like I feel like they're starting to try to rival Hollywood. And, like, this show breaking out as big as it did in America, to the point where the company that made it in Korea is suing Netflix for, like, I don't know, they feel like they got cheapened out of a deal because Netflix ended up, like, advertising it like crazy and it blew up and gave them a bunch of money. Right. But also, like, I don't know where to fall on that issue.
Yeah.
But, like, the point is, I think it's interesting that another country is, like, building up a film and movie media empire. Almost.
I feel like Korea, both North and South, because I know Kim Jong-il was like a huge film buff.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's his podcast?
There was like, he's dead now. There was like a This American Life story about he basically like kidnapped South Korean movie stars to come be in movies for him. Like, it was this weird thing. But I feel like Korea is sort of like India, where they've like always had this film industry.
Like Bollywood.
Right. And I could be 100% wrong here. This is just kind of the feeling I get. But it's one of those things where like America is sort of discovering it in recent years. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Kind of seeing like, oh, you know, because now everything's more accessible. You can get movies from other countries so much easier than, you know, you used to have to like track them down and order them from weird websites or catalogs or something. But like
now it's just on streaming services.
Bong Joon-ho is won the Oscar 2 years ago,
Parasite. Yeah.
And he made Snowpiercer and The Host and these things that have kind of had an impact on America. And then there's like the whole K-pop thing. I think like Korean pop culture is kind of what like Japanese pop culture has been to America. Like, mm-hmm. There's this kind of fascination with it to where people are becoming like real big enthusiasts of it, and of it's coming over.
I feel like it's even more than that. I feel like Japan had an influence on like certain things. I feel like Korean pop culture as a whole is just like becoming mainstream pop culture. Like, it's bleeding into it, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like America and like Hollywood kind of has like a grip on like movies and music and like all of the main pop culture things. And I think it's cool to see like different influences kind
sure.
of shake that up.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Has Hollywood like remade? I'm sure they have, because like a lot of like horror movies have come out of Asia that Hollywood has like remade. Like The Grudge, I think, was Japanese. And I know Japan is not Korea. I'm just trying to think of things that Hollywood has remade that were from Asia. I know they did a bunch of stuff from Europe, like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. They remade Let the Right One In. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Hollywood has this thing of like taking foreign movies and TV shows, and instead of like bringing them over and, you know, distributing them, they like remake it for American audiences.
Well, they take the foreign out of it pretty much. Like, even right. like when you look at something that's dubbed over, like they really like Americanize, like
sure.
what it is they're talking about and stuff.
But like, do you think that with it becoming more mainstream, do you think they'll stop remaking things and just bring the original, start bringing the original stuff over?
I think they should. I don't think they're going to.
Like in the way that, like the Miyazaki movies.
Yeah.
You know, like we're not reanimating, you know, Disney's not bringing those over. They're recasting and revoicing them, but it's still the movie. It's still the Miyazaki mm-hmm. movie.
Oh, well, I think, okay, so Hollywood is not going to change its ways. It's not going to start like bringing in outside stuff unless it is to remake it so they can make money. But there's things like streaming services, like HBO has all of the Miyazaki stuff,
mm-hmm.
And Netflix. Netflix makes, they have studios all over the world. They have Netflix originals that are like from Dutch and
right.
all kinds of places. So like, I feel like,
well, some of what Netflix does is they just go like, if somebody has made something and they think they can sell it, they just go and basically buy it, and then it becomes a Netflix original. But it wasn't made for Netflix, necessarily.
That's true. They have bought actual studios, though. Like, yeah. completely made them, like, Netflix studios. I don't know what countries are
what. When's all that money gonna run out?
Oh, it's... They're massively
in debt. Yeah, they're like... They've been in the red for years.
It's like a government, you know? Like,
yeah, but they're not a government. They're
never gonna pay their debts.
Like, they are a private company. They
no,
do, yeah,
no,
like,
no, no. That money does matter to them.
It's weird. But no, I do think Hollywood will change if... Like, don't say Hollywood will never change. Because, like, if there's money in it, Hollywood will change. Hollywood will... They follow trends wherever. Mm-hmm. Do you think that American audiences will stop saying, like, no, I don't want to see Let Me In. I want to see Let the Right One In. I want to see the original mm-hmm. thing from Sweden. I want to see the original thing... With it becoming more mainstream, I would love to see more audiences say, I don't want the remake. I don't want the David Fincher dragon tattoo. I want to see the real Swedish version or something like that.
Right. I would like to see that. And I don't want an American Squid Games like
right.
or anything like that. But the reason I said I don't think Hollywood is going to go for that is because I feel like Hollywood is in competition with other countries' movie businesses. Like, I feel like...
No, I get that. But like, they're... I mean, they still, like, as distributors, still make money. Like...
Sure.
You know, they still own the distribution rights in America if they can bring something over. And then they're not sinking production cost in. It's just a question of whether or not the American audience has, you know, starts demanding... This is what we want Bollywood movies. We don't want, what's the Danny Boyle thing?
I do not know.
Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh.
Which is not real Bollywood, but it's made to, like...
Feel like
Bollywood, like a, it's about Indian people, and it's made to be like a Bollywood movie. But you know what I mean? Like, at what point do American audiences start going, no, we don't want that. We want, you know, bring us real Bollywood movies that are, you know... And I'm just curious about that, because I think it's interesting, and I don't know a lot about foreign film markets.
I think it's interesting too, and what I like is looking at like film languages, like the shortcuts that directors use to establish things, like and just like when you start watching foreign stuff and paying attention, you see that like we have different movie languages.
We have different style.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, yeah.
Like, in Squid Games, there's a lot of, like, flashbacks to, like, 40 minutes ago in the episode where something comes back up and it's like, oh, it's not obnoxious like a soap opera.
Right.
But it's like, oh, let's watch this moment again with new context.
Oh, okay.
And suddenly it paints it very differently. And I think that's cool. Like, not everything has to be this thing that you piece together yourself.
Sure.
Even though that seems to be the American shortcut.
Well, and that's just putting a different lens on something. It's something like Rashomon or something like that, mm-hmm. where it's all about perspective. Yeah. That's interesting. I do have that on my list. I have yet to make time for it, but I have been hearing good things.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, structurally, like, the episodic nature of it is not like... Because a lot of American TV, what we do is we find a format, and then that becomes the structure of every single episode, and they just change the details.
Right.
This is not that.
Or a Marvel movie.
Yeah. This is more like an anime where each episode is, like, completely different, and, like, slight spoilers. No spoilers, but, like, it's very weird how they do it. Like, they pull the story this way and that way, and it's very unexpected.
All right.
It doesn't just have a linear progression.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
So they play with time a little bit.
Oh, no, not perspective-wise. I mean, like, your expectations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a weird way that they do
things. I guess you gotta be there. But, yeah, I'll get there.
I'm not going to explain a full episode right now.
Yeah, I think we're a little over on our review of the week. But, you know, let's Squid Games and Many Saints of Newark.
That's right.
But that's not what this episode is about.
No, no, no.
That's not what we watch for this show. We are finishing up our Evil Dead trilogy this week. And we are doing it with the 1992... fantasy, horror, medieval, comedy, Army of Darkness. This film follows store clerk Ash, who has been transported to 1300 AD as he tries to retrieve the Necronomicon and defeat the Army of the Dead so that he can return home. This movie stars Bruce Campbell returning as Ash, M. Beth Davids as Sheila, Marcus Gilbert as Lord Arthur, Ian Abercrombie as the Wise Man, Patricia Tallman as the Possessed Witch, Bill Moseley as the Deadite Captain, and Bridget Fonda as Linda, our third Linda. This movie was written by Sam and Ivan Raimi and directed by Sam Raimi, closing out his trilogy.
Kind of. Kind of closing it out.
Yeah, I don't know how involved he is on that TV show, but...
That's true.
It is... he is a producer on it, I know. So... Army of Darkness.
Do I have to start? Because I don't know where to start with this.
Let me start with this. Hammond Chamberlain, just shut this episode off. And go pretend we said nice things. I am going to say some nice things about this, but I will start and I will just come right out with it. This movie does not lock in with me. I think this movie has a lot of merit, and I think it does a lot of things really, really well. I recognize this. Here's how I'm going to cast this movie.
Okay.
This movie for me is something that I call the Scott Pilgrim phenomenon, where I can recognize a movie as being well made, as having a lot of merit. There is a audience that loves this movie and is a rabid fan base of this movie, but for whatever reason, this movie just does not lock in with me. Scott Pilgrim, same thing. I love Edgar Wright. I recognize that that movie is super well made. It's funny. It's cast well. Every element of that movie is exactly geared for the movie that is, but that movie just does not lock in with me. It is made for an audience that is not me.
Yes.
And,
okay.
And that's what I feel like Army of Darkness is. I don't know if I just saw this movie too late. Like, you have to be...
You have to be a college kid or
I was a junior or senior, and I think I was a senior in high school when this movie came out, and I didn't see it. I saw ads for it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know who Sam Raimi was at the time. I just had no context for it, and I didn't see it. And I didn't see it until I was like in my mid-20s. And I'm like, if I had known who Sam Raimi was and been on board the Evil Dead trilogy and saw this movie in high school in that context, it may have locked in with me and I may have a really strong connection to this movie now. But it just, it doesn't. And I see a lot of flaws in this movie that are going to anger a lot of people who are listening to this. But
Hammond, please.
Hammond, I can have a discussion with, and he'll go, it's fair. But like whenever you're dealing with a cult movie, a movie with a cult following, like, you know, there's rabid fan bases who are just going to be, you know, like super mad that you don't feel the same way. But like, no, I think this movie does a lot of things really great. And I do want to talk about those. But overall, I've seen this movie 3 or 4 times now. And it's one of those where I kind of, every time I watch it, I wait to see, like, is this the time where I go, I get it. And it just never does. I just can never quite. I like parts of this movie.
All right.
But it just doesn't lock in with me. I just don't see this as the work of genius that the huge fans of this movie do.
Can I butt in with, I don't feel the same way. Like,
do you
love
this movie?
My comparison, I don't love this movie. I'm going to compare this to Lord of the Rings for me. Because Lord of the Rings is something where, like, it's not like you said, where it's just not made for you, but you see the merit of it. Like, I see the merit of it. I like it. I just don't love it. Like, I think it's really good and it's fun to watch. It's just not like my special interest. It's just not like one of those things I gravitate towards.
I don't think we're disagreeing as much as you think we are, because I don't dislike this movie. I dislike parts of it, and I think it's a very flawed movie, but it just does not grab a hold of me. You know what I mean? Like,
but what I'm saying is it did grab a hold of me.
Okay.
Just like it didn't produce the skyrocket level of adrenaline that I think it was meant to. I don't know. This movie is trippy.
It is trippy.
You know how I described it in my notes?
No, but I would love to hear it.
All right, great. I described it as if Mystery Science Theater 3000 had watched a bad movie and, like, you know, they do their commentary, but that commentary was written into
the movie, right?
And then they acted that out again as the movie.
Well, that's the realization I had in putting the show doc together and, you know, to preview the trilogy recap, you know, is like Evil Dead is a low budget horror movie. Evil Dead 2 is a low budget horror comedy. Army of Darkness is a parody of low budget horror movie. Like it kind of goes from a serious movie to a parody of serious movie. Like this whole trilogy kind of goes full circle. But for me, that's where it goes. I think this movie is this movie is kind of a try hard. It's trying so hard to be clever. It's really throwing everything at the wall. And it wants you to go, this is the most clever thing I've ever seen. I feel like this movie wants to be Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's trying to be the next version, the next generation's version of that. And it just isn't. It just sort of like falls short of that. But at the same time, just like the first Evil Dead, I have to respect this movie for what it is, because this is very clearly the movie Sam Raimi wanted to make.
And it's a movie that's so bizarre that I'm like, how did this get made? But I guess when it's the third one, you've proven yourself 2 times. Like,
and you have to just respect that it did get made. That he made choices and whether I like those choices or not.
Choices were made.
Choices were made to put a lot of Three Stooges jokes in here. But, you know, and that didn't quite ring with me, but I respect that he made those choices, that they made it to film, and that this movie that would never, ever get made today by a studio.
Yeah.
Like, this movie got made and got released and has a really strong cult following. And you gotta respect that.
I do respect that. I don't know where to start with this.
Okay, let's start with Linda number three. Third movie, third Linda.
Third Linda.
And it's Bridget Fonda.
I don't know who that is.
Fonda was like a known actor at this time. She's still near the beginning of her career, but she was not an unknown person. I think
a little hard to get.
It's like, why did she do this movie where she has no lines? She's basically just on. And
now, is this the medieval woman that?
No, it's Linda.
Oh, she's the one at the store flashback. At the very yeah. end.
No, she's dead by then.
Okay. Well, that's what I was like. Linda died in the second one.
Right, at the very beginning when Ash is giving his recap of everything that happened.
They didn't show the same.
No.
See, I didn't even
get They show Linda in the store when they. Because this is the movie where we get Ash's, his whole backstory. Like, I work in S-Mart.
Yeah, and, because yeah. I've been wondering that very importantly.
Yes. But yeah, they show her there, and then they basically reshot the Evil Dead 2 sequence where it smashes through the spirit, the demon goes uh-huh. through the window, and they reshoot it with Bridget Fonda as Linda to match the movie. And it's like, so I'm just like, God, she must have been like a fan of Evil Dead and wanted to,
I guess so,
just be like stand-in Linda. Slight connection to our show. She is Henry Fonda's granddaughter. Henry Fonda, the main character of 12 Angry Men.
Okay.
Weird connection to... she hasn't been on our show before, but, you know...
Her
family has, yes. She's the daughter of Peter Fonda, the niece of Jane Fonda, and the granddaughter of Henry Fonda.
I'm a little ashamed that I didn't even recognize that it was a different Linda. But again,
she's barely in it.
She's barely in it. She spends 90 minutes in makeup.
Which is the that's just the mind-blowing part of it. Is like, oh, Bridget Fonda was in this movie and she's barely in it. But she is, like, they could have got anybody to play her. And they did pick, I think she was in Singles probably this same year. It's right around the time she did Point of No Return. Speaking of remakes of foreign movies, Point of No Return is La Femme Nikita, which was
French.
It was the Fifth Element guy, Luc Besson. It's like one of Luc Besson's early films, and then they remade that. Bridget Fonda was right on the verge of becoming like a big star in the 90s when this movie came out. So it's just, it was really weird to see her in that. And I'm like, they show her and I'm like, is that Bridget Fonda? What is she doing in here?
She's making money and she's having fun.
And she is married now. She wasn't at the time to Danny Elfman, who has music in this movie.
Weird connections all around.
I did a deep dive on Bridget Fonda after that. You know, I'm like, man. And then I was like, what is she doing now? And she retired from acting and was like raising kids and still married to Danny Elfman. And I was I got weirdly sidetracked by Bridget Fonda.
I'm imagining that you're like, why isn't this movie connecting with me? And you're spending like 90 minutes Googling.
The entire time I'm like on IMDb. I'm on Bridget Fonda fan websites. And
trying to answer the question. You've got like on a board,
the thread running everywhere.
Why did she do this movie?
It all goes back to 12 Angry Men. I have to watch 12 Angry Men again. But yeah, that caught my mind. And I think that kind of maybe speaks to, Because I'm totally projecting here. I'm totally guessing that the reason Bridget Fonda is in this movie is because she wanted to be in a Sam Raimi movie. Because I can think of no other reason. She was a fan of Evil Dead 1 and 2. And, right. And wanted, you know, just wanted a cameo or something like that. But I thought like it was really interesting.
I like when celebrities do that. Like, sure. I think, was it Donald Glover who was in Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Because he wanted to be, like, related to Miles Morales.
There,
so.
Yeah, there's some weird connection because I think he tried to get some Spider-Man project off the ground. Maybe it was Deadpool.
He wanted to be Miles Morales.
Right.
And so,
Oh, yeah.
So they gave him a cameo and, like, he said something about having an uncle or a nephew at home or something. Like,
you know, like 10 years ago, he would have been a really good Miles Morales, I think.
He would have.
Yeah.
I think he could pull it off.
That would have been cool.
Can we talk about Ash? Because yes. He is American. That is... He's like Ron Swanson and
kind of
Tony Stark, like put together in this weird 90s mix of.
It's, I think that's what, I think that's part of what people love about. This is kind of like, there's Evil Dead 2, and that's Bruce Campbell doing like physical comedy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the movie where Bruce Campbell became Bruce Campbell, like, as we know him now, as this swaggering idiot, you know? But, like, you say Ron Swanson, and it's like, Ron Swanson is, like, a capable dude who's just very confident in himself. And Tony Stark is, he has swagger because he's rich, and he has a robot suit. Ash is, he has that, like, unearned confidence, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like America.
Oh, okay. In that way, yes. I was like, he's not like jingoistic, he's not like flag waving, but like, I get what you're saying. Like, this unearned confidence, this swaggering idiot kind of thing who still succeeds.
Yeah,
like, but yes, I think it almost makes, I think it makes Ash kind of a parody of himself, but it also kind of works.
I don't know how to explain it. He's like a main character that does not care about the story he's in. He's just trying to get home, but not even, like, he doesn't even care that much. He's just walking through scene to the next scene to the next scene. Like,
the story kind of happens to him.
Yeah. He says at one point, he's like, I don't want your book. I don't want your bullshit. Just get me home pronto.
Right.
Like.
Right.
I don't know. There's something very American.
In that he's like demanding. I want this now.
Yeah. A little bit.
I'm entitled to this. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I can see that.
Not a dig on Americans necessarily. I'm just like,
no. I think that's an, like, earned dig. Okay. I think Americans have a problem with, you know, like I said, Facebook went out the other day. You'd have thought the world fell off a cliff. You know, it's like, true. Oh my God, I can't get on Facebook. Take it easy.
What'll we do?
No, that's a fair argument, and I think Bruce Campbell plays this role really well. Like, the idea of just swaggering around, you know, this is my boomstick, you know, dumb line, but the way he throws it out there is just, I mean, and everything, you know, groovy, like all his little catchphrases.
Save smart, shop S smart.
Shop smart, shop S smart. All of the little things that he does. But I think you're totally right. Is he really has no interest in going through the plot of this movie at the same time. He acts like he's the most capable one to do it, but he, like, has no interest in it.
Yeah. He's, I don't know. And he doesn't even seem like that interested in going home either. Like he wants to go home, but it doesn't seem like he's at a rush. He's just like,
right,
I want to go back home.
Yeah, he's more interested in like hooking up with the medieval women, you know, and and things, you know, using whatever modern pickup lines he has. It's just,
but at this point, he's the chosen one, and he's also like
In the prophecy, yeah,
yeah, but also like he knows these monsters. Like, I think my favorite scene is when that witch shows up, and like out of nowhere she appears, and she pretends to. She plays dead, and this guy goes to touch her, and he grabs the soldier's hand, Ash does, and he's like, it's a trap. Someone get an axe. Right. And then he's right, of course, and an axe ends up beheading her.
Yeah. It's a... I don't know. I feel like that's almost like the parody element of the movie, though, too. Like these... These movies where it's like, oh, do this thing, and that's the thing that, you know, it's like, you would never tell somebody to go get an axe just out of nowhere, but you just it just happens to be the thing you need. Like, I don't know, there's...
Well, to me, I saw it as, like, he has experience, like, he knows their tricks, like...
Yeah, but at the same time, he keeps falling prey to all of these things, like...
Yeah.
Like the weirdness, like the little ashes.
Oh my god!
AKA the most annoying part of the movie.
Honestly, like, I wrote down that some of the jokes fall flat, and I was talking about that scene.
For sure. Like, I think it's interesting that they're trying to do like a Gulliver's Travels thing. Like he's tied down to the floor. That's how the second Ash comes to be, you know, like the weird body horror, like where he finds the eye in his shoulder, which is a great effect, actually. I think that's really cool.
But also, like, that just feels like they're trying to remake the scene in the second one with him cutting off his hand. But just, they're like, okay, we got to do something different.
Yeah.
We'll have mini Ash. Like, I don't know.
No, for sure.
It didn't feel like a genuine or an interesting moment.
That is exactly how I feel about it. And that is a joke that also, like, overstays its welcome by a lot. Like,
yes.
Like, the hand running around and him shooting at the wall, like, that goes on the perfect amount of time. And this thing with the mini ashes, it just keeps going so long.
We got a little overeager here, okay?
Like you said, choices were made, but I don't know, that's the kind of things that drag this movie down for me and you know, make it like not as much fun as Evil Dead 2. And just, it's a little too self-aware. And it's a little bit too much repeating the gags. The scene at the end when he's in S-Mart and talking about, you know, like he's telling the story. The whole movie has been him telling this guy, coworker.
You don't like that?
I think that works as a device on its own, but then when, like, the witch shows up in the store, and then, like, that fight goes on, it doesn't go on too long, it just feels long. Like, he gets the rifle out, and he just starts shooting just endless bullets at her, and it just keeps going. It just is, like, the joke plays itself out, and then some. And that's what I feel. I feel like every gag in this movie just stays a little bit too... They're like SNL sketches that don't know when to end.
Yeah.
You know, and they just overstay their welcome. And it's like, if you would cut 2 minutes off that joke, it would have landed perfectly.
Well, I feel like the ending... Like, I really liked that scene. I will agree that the pacing was a little weird. I do like
the Hail to the King line, because it's so terrible that
it's great.
That's what makes Ash... great is that
but like he See, I saw that as like, okay, that story's over, but there's still more zombies to slay. Like, this right. is Ash's life is just going to be like this, and it's going to be ridiculous and fun, and
it was totally left open ended.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah, I get that. I don't mind that that she shows up in S-Mart. I just feel like it just is like gratuitous gun shooting for the sake of here's Ash being a badass, and we're just gonna keep showing it to you.
Well, I feel like that was like
maybe I was just exhausted by the movie.
It could have been, but I really like that scene because it like it encapsulates this is who Ash is and what this movie is, and like I feel like that's the cherry on top of the franchise. This is them closing out the three movies with like this is where we landed.
Right. And I would say that would be a success for the trilogy if this is who Ash had been through the entire... Ash is only this guy, this version of Ash in this movie.
That's true.
Like, yeah. He's really not this guy in Evil Dead 2, even.
Well, that's the thing is, these movies are inconsistent.
Sure.
This trilogy is horrible. It's comprised of three movies.
Three very different movies. Almost not connected.
Three incoherent, almost. Like, when put together, like, because I'm really trying to figure out, and then there's this show, and I looked at the trailer for that, and Ash has two hands. What's that about?
Well, he has two hands in this.
Well, he has a robot hand.
Right.
He doesn't have his robot hand. He has two flesh hands.
By the logic of these movies, there is any number of throwaway explanations they could have for why Ash has two human hands again.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? Like it almost is like, and that is, I think, a positive of this trilogy is that like there almost are no rules to it.
It's fan fiction. Like,
interesting.
There's no wrong answers.
It's fan fiction written by the creator. Yeah. Of the thing.
No, that's what I really think it is, because like if you look at it, like usually a trilogy is like planned out, or like it's just a really good standalone movie that you're like, I like the vibe of this, I'm gonna keep it going. This is Sam Raimi made a movie, one of his first. He was learning a lot,
right?
I don't think he liked it very much because he remade it and changed the tone completely.
Sure.
To make fun of itself, and like that's okay, and like he still did a lot of cool stuff, but it warped into this thing. So what you end up with is a movie that each sequel like warps it to a point where it's unrecognizable.
That's a sequel.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, that's
and so I think like as a story, that's horrible. But if you look at it as this is, like, just grade Sam Raimi. Like, he is improving on his homework assignments over the course of this trilogy.
He is becoming, I feel like you can see him become more confident. Ash is almost him. Like,
yeah,
he's gets a little more swagger with every movie to where he feels confident that he can put this swaggering idiot on film and sell him to an audience who will love him. And I think that's fair. I will disagree that that Evil Dead 2 is making fun of Evil Dead. I don't think that's a parody of Evil Dead. I think he just put comedy in it. I think he made it Shaun of the Dead, where it is a comedy that has real horror stakes to it.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie, Army of Darkness, is a straight up parody.
Yeah, there are no stakes to this movie.
No, at all.
Right, which isn't a bad thing.
No, no, I don't mark that as a strike against the movie.
But what I'll say about like making fun of the first movie, I feel like it's done in good fun, but I do feel like there's a certain like it's appreciating horror. But it is making fun of, like, the serious, like, full of itself tone of the first one.
Oh, I think that...
I feel like he didn't like the tone of that.
I think he's just having, he's letting himself have fun with it. He's not making a serious horror movie anymore.
Right.
You know, like he's taking that and he's having fun with it with like the tow truck driver and his girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
They're funny characters who in a serious movie would be menacing characters. You know what I mean? Like, and I think he just ramped that up into Army of Darkness where the monsters are not even threatening anymore. They're claymation skeletons, which are great. I love...
Oh, those are really good.
Love the skeleton army in this. Playing the drums with bones and like the flutes.
Yeah, that 5 minutes of the band.
But that is... I love that there are people in skeleton suits, like further mm-hmm. back. And then he also has like the stop motion Harryhausen style skeletons going closer. So there's like levels. There's like,
okay, I didn't even notice that.
There's like depth to it and they're using different effects on each level, each plane back. And it all melts together. The special effects look ridiculous by like realistic standards. But like, I got a sense of Sam Raimi's love for Ray Harryhausen special effects, the stop motion. What's the Jason and the Argonauts? You ever see like the clip of like the old adventure movie where they're fighting like the army of skeletons? If you've seen it,
I have not.
I guarantee you've seen it somewhere, but it is Ray Harryhausen was like this special effects pioneer way, way back in the day. And people are still aping what he does to pay tribute to him. And that is 100% what Raimi's doing with the skeletons in this movie. And it's great. It is my favorite part of this movie.
Okay. I loved the three books. When he goes to get the book and there's three of them. Like, that was instantly funny.
It's pretty good.
And then there's the Scooby-Doo-like moment where he gets pulled into the wormhole book and his face is
stretched out. Again, another joke that I think just went on just a little bit too long. But yes, I mean, that the three books is like the Indiana Jones, which had come out just a couple years earlier, where he has to pick the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And like these things are, I think, they're reminiscent of other movies, of adventure movies, of weird fantasy movies. And I think it, like I said before, these are all good elements and things that I recognize as good, but something just keeps this movie from locking in with me the way it does with other people. I don't want to come down hard on this movie, but I always come down on it a little bit harder than I intend to, because I just don't have as much fun with this movie as I feel like I'm supposed to be having.
I think part of it is it just needed like a little more plot-wise to do. Like, this movie is very simple. And I'm not saying like complicated, but like it felt a little too empty at times. Like with the mini ashes again. Like that came at a point in the story where I'm like, well, let's get going, like we're on this mission to find the book, and I thought that was gonna be like the whole movie, and then he finds it like pretty early on.
Yeah.
And then it's 40 minutes
and
in
then,
the graveyard.
Yeah, it's not even about the book.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, it becomes about evil Ash and the army of the dead, you know, like, which is cool. But you're right. It's like this movie, all these movies are only like an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
They're not long movies at all. So it is almost like there feels like there's this dead time in some of these where it's like they're trying to pad this out to fill, you know, like we got an hour's worth of story. We need another half hour. Like, so yeah, I think there is a little bit of dead time. They do some of the stuff and they don't fill time with it because the way Sam Raimi does montages is like super, like the real
quick
cuts.
Yeah.
But I love that though. Like I love the showing the him building the hand.
I thought that was a really cool montage.
I and it It's the same thing he did in Evil Dead 2 when they show him putting the shotgun on his arm. Or the chainsaw.
The chainsaw, yeah.
And, you know, like, just the quick cuts of little bitty ratcheting machinery and stuff like that. I'm like, those are such great little shots, and the way he edits them together is so fucking cool. Like,
it is.
Nobody does a fast montage like Sam Raimi, and I just think that is one of the coolest things he does.
Because it really takes you through, like, the just like the order of events so quickly to get the story across of the montage.
So economically.
Yeah.
Not just quickly. It's not just quickly. It shows you, okay, he's going to have two hands in this movie. How do we do that? Well, he makes a robot hand out of armor. Okay. How much time do we want to spend having him do that? I don't know, 30 seconds? You know, let's crank the, you know, like, hit the high points. And it's like a comic book. Like, if you were to see that montage in a comic book, it is the 8 panels that would be on a page, yeah, to show you, you know, this is how it comes together.
And is it that part or another part where he gets, like, a science book out of his trunk?
When they start to get ready for battle, they drag his Oldsmobile in.
That's right.
He's got all this shit in his trunk, and he's got, like, a high school chemistry book.
And he uses that to make gunpowder, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing where they, you know, open the trunk, the book, you know, mm-hmm, this, that, and the other. And it works so well. It's such great filmmaking, I think.
One thing that just occurred to me, you said this isn't a horror movie. Like, there's no stakes to it. 100% correct. But I will say, like, there are always serious moments in each of these movies. Like, in the last one, they did some really good serious horror. This has, like, some serious action. Like tense moments. Like, that scene where he's telling them to wait before launching the gunpowder.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is an intense scene.
Yeah.
And then when he's sword fighting with, mm-hmm, the skeleton? I don't even remember who
he is. I think so, yeah.
They're, like, going up the stairs, and it's, like, one of the best choreographed sword fights that I've ever seen. Like, compare it to any sword fighting movie, I think it's better than that.
Take another look at it, yeah.
Like, it was really good.
Well, there's also the beginning when they throw him in the pit with the monsters in the pit.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really fun scene, too. And, like, everything leading up to that is really interesting. Are they going to throw him in the pit? Is he going to get away? You know, like we said in earlier movies, Sam Raimi is really good at building tension, even in silly movies. He's able to sort of bring stakes into it. I will concede that there are stakes in this movie. This movie's so silly, it's hard to take the stakes seriously. But
very true.
Yes, he's still able to milk some tension out of these moments. Just the build up too. You know, like the catapult launching the gunpowder. You know where that's going.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Sam Raimi does that makes him able to build that tension is he shows you where it's going. So then you're waiting, you know, you're not in suspense of what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen.
You're just waiting for,
you know, for it to shift, to go there. And I think that is what he does so brilliantly. With that, that's a great example. The catapult. You know exactly how it's going to end,
but you're still on the edge.
But
of
you're
your
still
seat.
Just waiting for it, and he really does pull you in with that, regardless of where you fall on this movie. He's gonna pull you into that moment, I think.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the ending scene with Ash in S-Mart.
Okay.
finishing telling the story. I could have stayed. I thought about it. You know, like, so that's at everything we've just seen is Ash's telling of this story.
Sure.
Is Ash a reliable narrator?
Huh.
It affects nothing. We've just been told the same story. But it is just sort of like, Ash, in this movie, you kind of think, yeah, he's a bullshitter. But is that what we, the audience, are supposed to think? Or is that what all of his co-workers at S-Mart think until the witch shows up?
Is this supposed to be an unbelievable story?
Right. Or is he just an unbelievable person? Like, right. No matter what. Because even this movie even starts with him narrating, like, so basically
recapping the last
movie. He's telling the story of the last two movies. Which could account for the shift in tone if we want to roll this into.
If we want to give Sam Raimi a freebie.
Does this work as a trilogy if you account for the shift in tone being that Ash is bullshitting about all of it?
No. No.
A flat no. Man. I thought you would be the defender of this.
I'm not where letting we came it out go. This movie. No.
Okay. So this movie, just to recap, I think we both like this movie. You like it more than I do. I'm going to be a little harsher on this movie. Probably always.
I will say...
Or are you just... You don't like this movie. You're just afraid of internet fans. Like...
Hammond, please like me. No. No, this movie is a really fun trip. And I think... Just like a good time. Like a good party movie. Not a B movie. Not like a movie you put on to make fun of. This is an experience that you put on. I would call it...
This is a B movie that makes fun of itself.
I would put it on the same level as Monty Python in terms of not brilliance. Not but quality. Like, yeah, but like it is one of those movies genre, you can put on and just have a bunch of fun.
I think calling it a party movie is really a good call. Because this would be a fun movie to put on when you have a bunch of friends over. And, you know, it's on, but you're still talking. You're, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think Monty Python, for me, if I'm going to put Monty Python on, I want to watch Monty Python. And I want to...
Shut up, Monty Python.
I want to get all the... Oh, he's doing the coconut thing! Yeah, like, yeah, I think they are on the same level. And I do think that's by design. I think Sam Raimi really, really wanted this to be... hailed as the next Monty Python. That's why I call this movie a try hard. I think Sam Raimi is trying hard. Not in a poser way.
Yeah.
I just think a lot of it just doesn't work. He's putting it on the screen. I respect this movie in the same way that I respect his original Evil Dead. He's making the movie he wants to make. He's making it on his terms. He just has money now. You know?
Yeah.
And he made some bold choices. This movie's more entertaining than the first Evil Dead. But it still doesn't quite connect with me. I respect it in the same way. I like it in the same way. It's not the one I'll go back to the most. Evil Dead 2 is, for me, hands down, the best of this trilogy. I like Army of Darkness. I respect Evil Dead. I really like Evil Dead 2. I think it is by far the most fun, and I think it nails the tone that it's going for in a more entertaining way. I think Army of Darkness nails the tone it's going for the best. He's going for this tone, and he is nailing it.
And he knows.
It just doesn't connect with me in the same way. Evil Dead 2 hits me the same way Shaun of the Dead does. It's a very funny comedy. It's very silly. And it still is a good, fun monster movie. It's not a horror movie. I'm not scared by it, but it's a fun monster movie. And and that's where Evil Dead 2, that I sit with that one out of the trilogy, which I think we've established doesn't work as a trilogy, as a
not in the traditional sense. Not in the slightest.
There's not a through line, really.
This is practically the Shaun of the Dead. What are all three of those movies called?
The Coronado.
Hot Fuzz.
No, I would say it's even worse than that, because like you can look at those three movies, the Coronado trilogy, and they're all made by the same director. They're all made by the same, you know, written by the same people, directed by the same people. Three different stories, but the tone, the comedy, the style is all the same. These are three movies written and directed by the same person, completely different. They're 100. They're stylistically, tonally, everything. This is like a weird trilogy where this is like James Bond, where like James Bond movies are all made by different people. But it's even further out in tone than James Bond movies are. This is a really bizarre trilogy.
It's a trilogy having an identity crisis.
It totally is. I mean, granted, this trilogy takes place over like a 12-year period, and Sam Raimi grew by leaps and bounds as a filmmaker in 12 years.
Because of this trilogy.
I think in large part for this trilogy.
I really think he made the second one, and this just became like his experiment. Like, just, okay, whatever.
That's really interesting. We're going to have to track down some DVD copies and do a weekend where we watch the commentary tracks like Hammond suggested to us.
Yeah.
Because I bet you there's a lot of questions about stuff like this that's answered on that.
See, my thing is, that almost disappoints me. Because, like, on one hand, again, I think each one of these movies is good, and I am probably going to watch all of them again at some point. I'm not going to watch them together, because that's going to anger me. But but the thing is, like, they also made, in the end, a really interesting world with a really interesting tone, and I think it's a shame that we didn't get to see three equal movies of that. Like, I feel like we could have had a really cool trilogy on our hands if this had started with Evil Dead 2, and then this was the second movie, and then we had an even stranger third movie.
But I mean, all you're doing is moving the goalposts at that point, because it's always going to be everything you're describing is starting here, getting a little wilder, getting totally off the rails. And even if you started getting a little wilder, going totally off the rails, and then the third one is something even weirder. I think both of those, it doesn't matter where you start from. You're still exponentially going. Mm-hmm.
That's further. True, but then it becomes the trend.
Would it be Ash in space? Do you think that's what
I was literally going to say? Where do we get aliens involved in this?
Right. I will say
the Alien Necronomicon.
That's where it all originated.
That's what the black hole one is. Oh my god.
It could be. I will say, artistically, I think maybe in that frame, this could be a success as a trilogy if we are looking at these as testing grounds or experiments for Sam Raimi. I'm going to do Darkman for the studio. I'm going to do Quicken the Dead. I'm going to do Simple Plan. I'm going to do Spider-Man down the line. You know, these things that are studio, but maybe Evil Dead and all this was early in his career. He wasn't doing a bunch of other stuff. But if Evil Dead is always his playground to do what he wants, to make the choices he wants to make, regardless of what anybody else thinks or anything like that, if that was his goal, then this trilogy kind of is a success. Not in a narrative sense.
Yes.
But in its own, from an artistic point of view of making artistic choices, making creative choices, and following through on them, then, I mean, that's what I respect about this trilogy. Having sat through three consecutive weeks, back to back to back on this, and looking at it in that way, even the movies I don't like, I do respect them because they were Sam Raimi's choices.
Yeah, I will say this is not a satisfying trilogy, but it is an interesting case study.
Yes, I think that puts it really well. This is something like, I'm glad we watched these.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen the second two before, but I'm glad we watched these, and I'm glad we looked at them in this, from this perspective, mm-hmm. and sort of asked these questions about it, and we can see these kind of successes, you know, despite whatever drawbacks we have with them.
Can I go back to, you said that
Bridget Fonda's in this movie. Yes. Okay, I swear to God, that's her.
I believe you. Jeez. Get over your crush. He has a poster wall right
I
now.
Had a big crush on Bridget Fonda back in the day. Yeah.
No, you said that the third movie, that you like this movie, but that you think the second one, you like the second one better, and mm-hmm. you think it nailed it better. I don't agree.
Okay.
I like this movie better. I think ultimately the second movie is like more of a gemstone. Like, it's put together better. It flows better. As a standalone movie, it is better. But I still think this one was way more fun.
Look, it's all about what you lock in with, right? Talking about Hammond a lot. This is one of Hammond's favorite movies.
This is his episode.
This really is. Like, he may never talk to me again. I don't know. But no, I think Hammond has a skull from this movie. Like, that was actually used in the movie. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jay Hammond.
You're just making things up.
I'm just making things up. Hammond is in this movie.
He also is the Batmobile from... yes.
A lot of people lock in with this movie, and that's why I'm saying I'm not trying to blame the movie. Certain things I saw as drawbacks to it, this thing just doesn't connect with me in the same way. If it does with you, cool. I think Evil Dead 2 is a better made film, and I like the tone of it. Personally, I like the tone of it better. It nails that balance between horror and comedy. Right. That's just the balance I found appealing.
Right. That's fair. And this could literally just be, this is the one that I just saw the most recently. Yeah. Because I'm already forgetting the second one.
But personal taste and timing. Yeah. Like, that has a lot to do with it. On the note of Raimi making choices, I just want to say, because I've been talking about this a lot recently, Heather Welch of Sunshine and Power Cuts and the Not Just Heather podcast.
Yes.
She and I have talked a lot recently about making, how when you make something, like she used the example, she started her podcast and then she got a lot of positive feedback about it, and it made her think about how she made her podcast. And then she was questioning, well, now am I making it for myself, or am I making it for... I'm paraphrasing.
So that informs the creation. How,
right. And she and I have talked a lot about wanting to get back to a term she coined was creative island, where you go out and you're kind of on your own and you are just making something kind of in a vacuum. And making your choices and living and dying by them, you know?
Right.
And that is this graphic novel that I've been working on. That is a result of me trying to be on Creative Island and make this thing that is purely for me. It is something I'll hopefully publish one day, but the creation of it is mine and making. And so that has been on my mind a lot. And when I watch these movies through that lens, it is just insanely obvious that that's what Sam Raimi is doing, is 100% making these movies that he wants to make and these choices that he, that are very much choices he wants to see. And that's why I think, in talking about timing of watching these movies, that's why I'm watching these and having this huge respect for them, because it's like, he made choices,
yeah,
and lives and dies by them. And I think when you look at things through that lens, a lot of artists that you may not like, what they do, I think sometimes we have to take a minute and go, I respect that they do it.
Yeah.
That they have made a choice and they're rolling with it and they are owning it 100%.
Weird reference, but Lady Gaga is very much like that for me. Like, I don't love all of the stuff she does.
Right.
But I'm like, well, that's Lady Gaga doing her Lady Gaga thing.
Right.
Like, very much. She commits to roles. She commits to what she does.
So I don't know a lot about Lady Gaga, but yeah.
Okay.
It's.
She wore a meat suit one time.
Yeah, I do know about the meat suit. Okay. Yeah. And Star is Born.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a movie.
It is. We're not talking about that one, though. Okay. That's it. I mean,
are we still talking about this one?
No, like, I think we've got it. You got anything else about the trilogy as a whole, about Army of Darkness?
I can't say I do.
Are we good?
I think having watched this, a TV show, completely unnecessary.
Probably, but I think there is an audience for it, knowing that there's a big audience for the Evil Dead trilogy and Army of Darkness.
Could be.
Specifically.
And I know I just gave this series of movies shit for not being tonally coherent. So, like, if you're going to make a TV show that can live up to that kind of absurdist comedy horror that this evolved into, if you start at the end of this movie franchise and just keep going with that, you same can
take
tone,
it anywhere.
If they keep it consistent, then maybe it's a good thing.
Maybe. I haven't seen any of it. Maybe I'll check it out at some point.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the Evil Dead trilogy. That's our Halloween trilogy. We have one more Halloween movie coming.
One more that you picked.
That's right. Let's move on to shout-outs. And I will just say, last note on Evil Dead. I'll take it. At me. You know, hit me up on Twitter. Tell me what you think. Are you a fan of this? Are you not a fan of this? We want to hear from you. Has this been, like, your favorite for all time? Message me or hit me up on Twitter.
That's right. We will fight with you.
Oh, we will fight to the death.
You want to know why you're wrong? Well, we'll tell you.
Yeah. Don't worry. We got you. Austin, what do you got for shout-outs this week?
For shout-outs, I am... I'm going to direct people towards a podcast. It's an audio drama.
Okay.
It is called Wolf 359, and it is about a observatory space station that is orbiting a star named Wolf 359. That's a real star, by the way.
All right.
It's only a few hundred light years away from us, which sounds far, but that's like in the nearest 20 closest stars.
All right, Dr. Tyson, you want
to... Space, the final frontier. So this is a story about a super lazy mechanic.
Nice.
Who works on this ship, and then, you know, a bunch of weird shit happens, and there's aliens and sentient planets and weird takeover of space station. It's wild.
All right.
But it starts out this... Interestingly enough, it is a bit like Evil Dead, because it starts out very much a it's the reverse, where it starts out completely a comedy, and then it morphs into a much more serious, darker drama, and then it just stays there.
Huh.
So it kind of does the reverse of this.
Okay.
But it is better for evolving, and I still think the beginning is good, so go check it out.
Wolf 359. Okay, cool.
Yeah, what do you have?
I have a TikTok channel. This is a dude in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Basically Canada. He's almost in Canada, and he sounds like a Canadian. He goes by the name Old Time Hockey, and he is just the... he lives in a cabin in a swamp with his dog, and he just is speaks with a soothing voice and makes food and tea and coffee, and he's like, oh, hello there, buddy. Why don't you come join me? And I'll take you on a little tour of the woods where he lives and take you fishing, and just this very soothing voice. It's got this, the whole vibe of it is like wilderness Bob Ross, like this very positive guy. There's one where he's like, oh, can't sleep, buddy? Come on in. I'll make you some tea. And it's just something this very, very cool vibe you get from this guy. He's very popular on TikTok because I think, like the thing we've been talking about the last few weeks, people find something that's positive and soothing and they gravitate towards it. Because
right.
it is such a breath of fresh air. This guy, I will scroll and his video will come up, and it is just like a minute of serenity in your feed. And
do you know what this is, Dad?
What is this?
This is ASMR.
It kind of is.
It's relaxing. Yeah. It's soft. I think it's cool. I know
ASMR gets like parodied a lot. A lot of people think ASMR is like purely sexual. Like, ASMR, like, is a legit thing for, like, soothing, I don't know what...
Like, sensory...
It true ASMR, I think, triggers a part of the brain.
It calms the brain.
But I listen to... I do a lot of, when I'm going to bed at night, I do a lot of, you know what binaural beats are?
No.
Where it's like... You put your headphones in and they'll play two different frequencies that sort of like harmonize.
They're
done for different things. And you can say this is like essential oils of audio, like that it's not a real thing. I don't know where science weighs in on this at all, but like there is like a calming effect that comes from it. Or I will listen to like YouTube's great for this because they have so many videos of like, here's a fire crackling for like 12 hours.
Yeah.
Or the one I've been doing lately is like a pirate ship, and it's just like this old
creaking
wood, yeah, and waves crashing. That thing is so chill.
What I love, this is very obscure, but there are these videos that are like, it'll be music playing, but it's like in the bathroom, like, so you're listening to it. More like it's outside, like you're at a club and you're in the bathroom and you can hear the door like open and it gets louder and then it shuts and it's like this soft.
Oh, that doesn't sound relaxing at all, but yeah.
No, it is. It's.
Oh, someone's in the bathroom with me now.
I'm pee shy. This is the worst.
Stop it. But yeah, no, I love stuff like that. Just any kind of little relaxing video I find. And, I like this guy, ASMR or not. I think he's a cool, positive dude. And it's just got a really chill vibe. And it's also like, because he'll start the video and the first time you watch him, like you wait for a punchline. You don't know if this is like a guy parodying somebody. Yeah. And it just like, it never comes. And you're just like, oh, that was just a guy making tea. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. And I love it for that. So
it's really cool.
Old Time Hockey on TikTok. On that note, we are going to thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility and helps us grow the show.
Do you want to know another way to help us grow?
Yes, I do.
Tell a friend. That's right. Even if you like don't have the time for it like right now, a real handy trick is to go back in time and tell people about us back in time so that they'll become fans of our show and spread that to their kids and their kids' kids. So if you go back to, like, let's say medieval times for some random reason, that's the time period I've chosen, and you tell people, guess what? We're going to have millions of fans.
Millions.
By the time we actually launch our show.
We'll owe it all to you.
So yeah, if you want to be that fan, tell people about us.
Please do. Votes for our next episode are not all tallied yet, but our next trilogy is your call.
That's right. We will be picking up the trilogies with the Dark Knight trilogy.
Right. Batman Begins.
That's right. Batman Begins, and then it's Dark Knight,
Dark Knight.
And Dark Knight Rises.
Yes, the Christopher Nolan films.
I don't know why I picked two trilogies, both with terrible
naming conventions.
Yeah, it's really, it bugs me. But they are great trilogies. So
yeah, looking forward to that one. And when we kick that one off, that will be episode 50 for us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Moving right along. So yeah, the Dark Knight trilogy is coming up after we close out our Halloween month next week.
Put away your pumpkins and get out your Batman merch.
That's right. That's right. Oss, what's your social media?
I am on Twitter. You can find me at Austin N. Rude and Old Who Review.
And I am philrude.com. At Phil Rude on Twitter, at PhilRude75 on Instagram. Oss, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We did it all ourselves.
There you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.
Sometimes getting a good night's sleep is not just hard to do, but it's no fun either. That's why the fine folks at Slumber Party Mattresses have invested the time and money to make every bedtime a better solution for somnolence. Whether you're dozing, napping, or snoozing, getting some shut-eye or catching some Z's, Slumber Party has a scientifically enhanced mattress for you. Top options include the Catnapper, 40 Winks, the R.E. Emmington Steel, and the Eternal Rest. The last one can be converted to line your coffin, so even in the afterlife, you can sleep like there's no tomorrow. On top of that, each model is genetically modified to your specifically required repose. Never have another sleepless night, and get a Slumber Party mattress today.